And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
I am the one. I am the only. I am not Iron Man. But that is the topic of our podcast today. So if you survived last week's, last episode's plethora of various topics, and you made it all the way to the end, you know that we are not talking about the first Iron Man or the second. We are talking about, as what Michael called earlier, the end of the Iron Man trilogy.
Well, the title of the episode is the end of the Iron Man trilogy. But also, if you've been living under a rock and haven't been listening to any episodes, you would have known that we've already done the first six movies of the MCU. We're now starting phase two.
So if this is your first time watching, please go back and listen to, or this is your first time listening, please go back and listen to the other episodes.
So because we're recording this the same time we recorded the last episode, this is also the first time we've been recording since late October. So you're having to get used to saying listen because only you and I can see each other.
It'll come back to me. You know, next week it'll all be listen and hear from you and I hear what you're saying and yada, yada, yada. But today is not that day.
Nope.
So,
but hopefully, but because I did submit Nerdy Notions as a panel for AwesomeCon this year, if we get picked up, you can say, thanks for coming.
Yes, I can. And I can look out into the audience and look at all the blank faces staring at me and go like, I've made it big.
Mistake.
Like, what have you gotten me into, Michael?
Oh, don't worry. How many panels have we done? Not together, but in general.
I'm at like 6 or 7 at this point.
Yeah, I'm probably around 15, 20.
I have some catching up to do.
Yeah. But yet again, I've been getting invited out to conventions a little longer than you have, so.
And that's true. And that's also not counting the conventions I will be doing this year. And as Michael mentioned, we will be Saturday, hopefully if we get picked, Saturday, May 2nd, we will be in DC at AwesomeCon. And yours truly and my fabulousness will be at GalaxyCon in Richmond, February 29th. It's leap year, guys. Apparently that means something.
That means that I've been living in Maryland technically for only X amount of years and not 30 something because I moved from New Jersey on February 29th, 1988.
Congratulations. And actually, May 2nd, not that exact date, but AwesomeCon 2020 will actually mark the 1 year since Michael and I met, actually, because we met at AwesomeCon in 2019.
Actually, we should save that story for later, because that's a good story.
It's a good story, actually. It's
a really messed up story, too, at the same time, but we'll go with it.
No regrets.
Oh, No. I'm not saying that there's any regrets. I'm just still saying it's kind of messed up at the same time.
I guess. Anyway, so we are starting the phase two portion of the MCU, which is like, I think it's almost like a forgotten phase of the MCU.
I think the first two movies are really the forgotten ones of the phase two because everything really picked up with the third film, which was Captain America: Winter Soldier. And then you obviously got Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, and it was just that whole buildup going into what would eventually become, like, I think out of all the movies in phase two, only three of them were not the greatest.
And Age of Ultron, yeah.
Yeah, so.
All right, so let's dive in. Welcome to Iron Man 3. So this is the first Iron Man movie that is not directed by Jon Favreau. He directed the two previous movies, but for this one, he actually,
he played Happy and he was an executive producer.
And actually Happy's upset love of Downton Abbey is actually reflective of Jon Favreau's love for British TV shows. And it's very cute, but, he did not direct it. Shane Black was actually the one that I believe directed this film.
Hold on.
And so,
it's right here.
Oh. As Michael reaches across his room, his literal shelf wall to like floor to ceiling shelf, You're going to go through all three Iron Man until you find the right one.
No, I found the right one. I grabbed Iron Man 2 by accident. So it was directed by Shane Black. The screenplay was by Drew Pearce and Shane Black. Produced by Kevin Feige, and executive producers were John Favreau, Luis Esposito, Charles Neuwirf, Victoria Alonso, and Stephen Broussard. Oh, and Alan Fine. And obviously...
Sorry, I have to ask, what did Victoria Alonso actually do for this movie? Or for any of these movies?
I think... Okay, so there's five different executive producer titles. So, like, you have Stan Lee and Dan Mintz, which obviously is from the Marvel side, which that was always a normal thing that we saw. Alan Fine could be from one department overseeing the film. Charles, Victoria, and Steven could be from another section that could be, maybe they're like the chief financiers of the film. And then obviously you have Favreau, who was like, he's really the grandfather, the godfather of the whole MCU. And same with Kevin Feige, so...
Yeah. So anyway, we begin with, we actually don't start in the direct aftermath of, like, after the Avengers. We actually begin in 1999.
I'm blue, badu, I love that song.
It's a good song. But we also have this, like, narration of Tony Stark doing, like, a voiceover. So it kind of sounds like he's telling us a story. And that's important for the after credit scene. But... So we also see, like, the suits getting destroyed. So we do actually see, like, the narration of Tony, the suits getting destroyed, and then it flashes back to 1999. So it's New Year's Eve in Switzerland. And Tony is obviously pre-Iron Man, so this is...
Plastered. He's plastered.
He's plastered. He's a dick. But he's like, he's a dick in a Tony Stark-esque way. Like, it's a different kind of...
Yeah, but we do get a nice little cameo.
Yes, we do. I have that. We're getting to that.
Yes.
So Tony is talking to some smart girl he wants to, you know, not talk science with. Well, there'll be a little science talk, but we all know what it's leading to. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hint, hint.
But say no more. Say no more.
He on his way through the people, he actually meets with the cameo, who is actually Ho Yinsen. Yinsen was the one who saved Tony's life and who then gave his life so Tony could escape his terrorist kidnappers. And if we remember in Iron Man 1, he actually does say, "You and I actually met once briefly." And so that-
And he also alluded to the Switzerland conference.
Yeah, so it was very nice, and it was kind of like it was a very sweet nod of continuity that I genuinely very much appreciate. And Yinsen is trying to introduce him to a heart doctor, ironically enough. But Tony continues to narrate about his, like, past coming back to bite him in the butt. And so Tony and Happy and Maya, whose name we don't know yet, who is the pretty scientist lady he wants to
have fun with.
So they get into the elevator, but he's also joined by another man named Killian.
Played by Guy Pearce,
whose name I always forget. I'm going to write that down now. But anyway, Guy Pearce is like a nerd with a cane, like long, big, thick glasses, like the kind of person pre-Iron Man Tony Stark would not associate with. And so he presents him with this idea of his new think tank called Advanced Idea Mechanics, shortened as
AIM.
AIM, you know, that like totally not bad guy organization in the Marvel Universe. So now they're, I think, more of a gray area. Anyway. Tony's like, "Yeah, sure, dude. I have a pretty girl on my arm. I totally want to talk business with you. Meet me on the roof in 5 minutes." Tony, meanwhile, with Happy, go to Maya's hotel room, and she does something interesting with plants. She's basically a fancy schmancy botanist, and she gets offended by that later, but bioengineer of sorts. And so her and Tony talk science. And Happy plays with one of her plants, and she's like, oh, please don't touch the plant. She doesn't like being touched or whatever. Like, yes, plants have feelings. Safe plants, eat cows.
They don't have feelings, eat them.
That was a joke. Vegans, please don't attack me. No tortures, no pitchforks, please.
It, come after me, it's okay. I had a cheeseburger. I had a bacon cheeseburger before we did this, so you can come after me.
I had a hamburger on Saturday when on my way to where I am right now. Anyway.
To your undisclosed location?
To my secret bunker in New Mexico.
On the East Coast. To your secret bunker in New Mexico on the East Coast.
Yep. It's the New Mexico East Coast. Anyway. So Happy... First of all, Happy had a mullet. That was really funny. And as they exit the elevator, he's like, let's go mullet, or follow the mullet, something like that. It was actually
really
funny.
Follow the mullet, ladies.
Yep. But there's other women that like don't go anywhere with him. Or maybe like they partied and then went back to her hotel or whatever. So she talks to him about like using the brain and like stimulating other parts of the brain to help regrow limbs. And apparently that's what she's doing with the plants and whatnot. It's weird and it's like,
And you find out about it right off the bat because Happy couldn't help himself and he broke the plan a little bit.
He did it on purpose, and he did it just to annoy her because I would be that person.
Yeah. Because of Happy's actions, plant go boom.
Yeah, so the plant like regrows itself first, the little petal that he plucked, and then there's an explosion. And it's really funny because Happy's job is to protect Tony. So he just like jumps on Tony on the bed. It's really funny.
It's really adorable. They should get a room.
Happy is just so sweet. We love Happy.
But have you, like, we'll talk about this when we get into like phase two and phase three. But man, whatever happened to Happy to make him a complete dick?
Years of working for Tony Stark will do that to you.
So. Anyway,
we'll get to that. But his experience in this movie could have changed his outlook on the world slightly. Or because we see Happy from a different perspective of a different character. We'll get to that.
Well, we do see a little bit of him kind of being a little bit of a dick in this film too. And this is like really the first time we've kind of seen him go that route, that direction. But
being Iron Man's bodyguard will do that to you.
I know. But what was it? But you also find out in that scene, but you gotta be listening for it, but Maya actually does call the project Extremis.
Yes, she does. So the idea is like it's like hacking the human body.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that we'll talk about when we get a little further in the film, but a lot of people think, when you hear about it later on in the film, that's the first time you're hearing about the name of the project, when really it's in the beginning of the film when you hear it.
Yeah.
It's said so quietly. And it's said in a way where you don't think about it.
So we flash forward to Tony building another Iron Man suit, and he hasn't slept for 72 hours because we don't sleep now after nearly dying to save the universe. Well, just New York. Like, who really needs New York? Just kidding. So he doesn't sleep, and he's making all of these suits, and Jarvis is annoyed. Well, as much as Jarvis can be annoyed, because Jarvis does have feelings. So he injects something into him, and it's like a magnet.
It's like a nanochips.
Yeah, they're like nanochips that like call the Iron Man armor to him, so like it just like flies over and attaches. That'll be important later. It's not like foreshadowing or anything. These movies don't do that. They're not, you know, deep like that.
And just remember, Tony, cup check. When he's having the suit come to him, he takes a little hard below the belt.
But what's really interesting is if you rewatch Avengers, he has these like bracelets that kind of do something similar. So this is actually like the next step in the evolution of the Iron Man suits. And it's actually implied that like since the end of the Avengers, or at some point in between like Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3, that he's built all of these different suits. And so pretty much that. So on the screen, there's talk of this terrorist known as the Mandarin, who talks funny and apparently has a very deep background in American history.
And played by Ben Kingsley.
Played by King
Ben. Who is an amazing actor.
But it's not that like he's just on screen. He actually like hijacks the airways and he's calling out, why am I adding so much? President Ellis. We actually have a name for the president in this universe. This is the first time we've heard of him. I'd heard him mentioned out loud. We've seen other government officials. We've seen SHIELD agents. We've seen like General Ross. We saw the Security Council. But this is the first time we actually have a name to the president of the United States.
And I think if I remember right, this is the only time we've ever seen the president in the entire MCU.
Seen, yes, but not the only time he's mentioned.
Well, not, I mean, well, seen is more important than mentioned because, like, Senator Sanders and Stern. Stern. Senator Stern, like, he's obviously seen a lot. He's seen quite a bit in Iron Man 2, and then you get more of him in Winter Soldier.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So after, as, you know, the terrorist thing is going on, after the airwaves turn back, we actually go to President Ellis, and he's introducing the force that will fight and bring down the Mandarin. Is it Captain America? No. Is it SHIELD? No. It's Norman Osborn. No, just kidding. Well, so Rhodey comes out.
It's the Iron Patriot.
Patriot. And when I saw this, my first reaction is, please tell me, like, I knew he couldn't be Norman Osborn because Marvel didn't have the rights, or Disney didn't have the rights. But so everybody's question is, why Iron Patriot? Because War Machine sounds cooler, but it was apparently it tested better with the demographics or whatever. I thought was actually really funny.
And then you get the news people, like you get like Bill Maher mocking it, which was great. Yeah. I think who else? It was Bill Maher, and I think there was one other person that came to mind, and I can't think of it. Whatever. They weren't that good. It was Bill Maher's that was the better one because he really ripped into it. But
pretty much. Anyway, so later on, Tony's like really fascinated by this Mandarin. So he meets with Rhodey to discuss this. And Rhodey can't really tell him a lot because it's classified and whatnot. But as they're talking, and Tony makes fun of him for being the Iron Patriot, these two little kids come up, and one of them made like a drawing of Iron Man, and it's really cute. And one of the kids says something about like New York and the aliens, and Tony thinks he's having a heart attack. So he like freaks everybody out. He goes outside, he puts on the Iron Man suit, and Jarvis is like, he's like, Jarvis, I'm having a heart attack. And Jarvis is like, sir, you just had a panic attack.
Yeah, and actually what the trigger was is that like, it was the kid kind of always asking the questions.
It was like, one question.
Yeah. Because it was like, oh, what was it like being in space? You know, that type of thing. Or how did you get back from space? But, you know, but like, yeah. And then, but it actually plays off into the next scene, which is when, well, actually not the next scene immediately, but a scene that comes up. Because the next scene that we get is actually Pepper with Happy, and Happy is doing his badge thing.
Don't forget the part where Tony professes his love for Pepper, and Pepper is just like, yeah, okay. Oh, Tony gives her a Christmas present, and it's a giant
yes
rabbit. Like not just like a big rabbit that you could hold, no, this is a floor to ceiling rabbit.
Yeah, but that scene wasn't right away. That scene came after she met with Killian.
I think it was after. No, it was after because I have notes about the scene with Killian.
Yeah, because the thing about the bunny and stuff like that. And how he professes love. That was after she met with Killian.
You're right. You're right.
So, yeah, because the next scene is actually Pepper and Happy, and Pappy is going like, badge.
Yeah, so we flash to Stark Industries, and where Happy is now the head of security, and everybody hates him for it. And as he's walking around, you know, he has this memo, and everybody's like, he's like, badge, and I'm tapping my chest, not that you can, like, my side, not that you
badge,
can.
Badge. Come on, I put a memo in the urinals, men. You know, that's a literal line in the film.
So Pepper has a meeting, and we are reunited with the no longer giant nerd with a cane and long hair, Killian Jones. And Killian has...
Is it Killian Jones?
Or Killian...
It's Killian something.
Killian Aldridge, excuse me.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Aldridge Killian, that's what it is.
Aldridge Killian, yeah.
So he presents Pepper with this, like, weird brain thing that, like, helps, like, it was something that, like, could very easily be weaponized. It's, like, almost like a way to brainwash people, which I actually, now that I hear that said, is a weird enough hint at my favorite movie of this phase, which is Captain America the Winter Soldier. But anyway, so it's this, like, really cool device, and you can, like, step into a person's brain and whatnot. And Pepper's like, oh, this is really cool, but this sounds like a weapon, and we don't do that. Sorry.
Yeah, it sounds like weapon. It sounds like something that can be weaponized, superhuman, soldiers, and that's something that we just don't do anymore.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Anyway, meanwhile, Happy's sitting outside, and he's, like, eyeing Killian's bodyguard. And something about him just doesn't sit right with him. But we'll get back to that, because then...
Well, when he's sitting in the chair like a douchebag.
And acting like a douchebag,
yeah.
So Pepper comes home.
That, there was the phone call between Happy and Tony.
Oh, Lord, that phone call.
And, Happy doesn't know how to use technology. Like, he's talking to Tony. He's telling him, like, oh, he's meeting with Aldrich Killian. And it's like, here, and he's showing her his brain, and it's like, here, let me show you. It's like, oh, I just see your giant forehead.
A nice forehead. But, yeah. But anyway, so Happy's not really happy with this Killian Jones character, and that'll play a part later.
Aldrich Killian, not Killian Jones, Aldrich Killian.
Sorry, or just Killian. I don't know why it's Jones. I think I'm flashing to Once Upon a Time. For some unfortunate reason. Anyway, so Pepper comes home, and there's that floor-to-ceiling rabbit who's, like, super cute, and there's Tony just, like, casually sitting in his new Iron Man suit. I had an entire lead-up to that that just got... Anyway, so Tony, the Iron Man suit, is sitting there, and Tony's, like, confessing his love to Pepper, and Pepper's just, like, not fooled. So she's like, well, I'm just going to check out what you're doing in the workshop. And as she goes down to the workshop, Tony's actually not in the suit. He's in his workshop with, like, this, like, ocular device.
As Sasha stares evilly at me.
So he's, like, tinkering. Pepper calls the suits a distraction. And actually, I think it was Feige who said that the movie is actually a love triangle between Tony, Pepper, and the Iron Man suits, which is actually kind of accurate, because the entire movie is basically him trying to figure out what's more important to him, all of these suits or Pepper. And honestly, I don't know why Pepper hated the bunny. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, it got blown to smithereens eventually, so
we're getting to that.
I know. Yeah. But actually, one thing about that scene that's also important is that as she gets down there, she sees that Tony already had food down there. Mm-hmm. So she got mad because they're supposed to go out to dinner. And then he openly confesses to her that he hasn't slept, that he can't sleep. Like, when they go to bed, he comes down here and he works on the things because it's the only thing that's keeping him sane.
And in case it wasn't obvious yet, Tony's got a case of PTSD that will be never mentioned again after this movie. Maybe once in Spider-Man, and again in Endgame.
Yeah. So it's like, but the thing is, though, is that he really goes through the PTSD. And he really, you know, he it really is a traumatized person. And yep. And he actually does the thing that a lot of people can't do when they're in that, and that is be open about it, which is a huge, powerful message to go, you know, he knows something isn't right. She obviously cares about him. He needs to be open about it.
The words do not come out of his mouth because communication was never Tony's strong suit, but he's working on it.
But he does the best that he can.
Yeah.
To communicate it.
And he does kind of tell her that, like, I think Pepper understands what's going on. And then that night, Tony has a nightmare and Pepper wakes him up. But because of the nanos in his arms, it actually calls the iron suit to him because he's afraid. And Pepper freaks out, like, rightfully so. Like, there's just an Iron Man suit appearing randomly. And she's like, I'm going to go sleep on the couch. I'm like, bad move, Pepper. But, so he does have nightmares. And, like, you know, it was a traumatizing experience. He almost died in space. Like,
yeah.
Anyone. So Happy ends up following the bodyguard. And he ends up following him to that, like, Los Angeles, like, theater.
The Chinese new theater.
Thank you. That. And he gives, like, a suitcase and is like, hey, this is, like, the legit stuff. And he gives it to somebody who kind of looks like a junkie. And he takes it. And we kind of see, like, there's something, like, glowing on the bodyguard. So he has some sort of powers. And then the junkie explodes after injecting himself with this whatever it is.
Well, before that, Happy purposely walks into the junkie to knock the briefcase out of his hands, and he picks up one of the items that was in there so he can kind of pocket it to give it to Tony. And but obviously then Happy encounters the bodyguard, and the bodyguard's like, well, that doesn't belong to you. And then that's actually when you notice the glow, because Happy punched him.
Yes. And then
that's when the junkie did the thing. He exploded, and Happy was able to do the smart thing by getting behind one of, like, the vendor carts, because it shielded him from a lot of the blast.
Which is probably the only reason he survived.
But he also positioned himself, because he noticed the dog tags. He positioned himself to point at the dog tags.
And that comes up later.
Yeah.
When Tony recreates the crime scene. Oh, now you have me doing it. So Happy goes to the hospital, and we see Tony with Happy in the hospital, and the nurse goes, so first of all, actually, we don't see Tony. We see the nurse coming in to check his vitals or whatever, and as she goes to turn off the TV, Tony's, like, hidden, and he's in the corner, and he's like, leave it, he loves it, and it's Downton Abbey on the screen. Happy is precious. Let's see, and the funny thing is the Mandarin actually takes credit for this attack. He basically calls it, you know, cultural appropriation and just explodes it.
Well, I mean, the starting of it, though, was he told the story of the fortune cookie.
Yeah.
And then he led into, and he says that it was hollow and blah, 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 like American ideals. And I just attacked another one of your hollow, fake American ideals in the Chinese theater. So it was like kind of like Chinese fortune cookie. Chinese theater, hence the tie-in of them together. But yeah, but then what was it?
As Tony is leaving the hospital, somebody asks him about the Mandarin.
Well, a bunch of reporters are pestering him about the Mandarin, but then it's one guy in particular, which honestly,
like, are you going to kill the Mandarin?
Well, no. Well, the interesting thing about this guy is that when you actually look at the reporter who asked the question of when is somebody going to finally kill this guy, which was the exact quote of what the guy said. If you actually look at the guy, he almost looks like Guy Pearce. Almost like he was in disguise as a plant.
C'est possible. That actually makes sense based on what happens next.
Yeah.
So Tony is irritated and does something very stupid. he threatens the Mandarin and gives his address. And claims that this is all, you know, he's going to get revenge on the Mandarin for hurting Happy. So we then flash back to the house. And Tony's trying to convince Pepper to, like, go somewhere because the, like, the agents are coming because the house isn't safe or whatever. And Maya shows up.
No. Before you say that, like, before Maya shows up, you hear ding dong. The doorbell.
We missed the whole thing.
Oh, we did?
After all of this, he, like, there's, like, an acknowledgement of theatrics, blah, 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 blah. So then we go to the crime scene reconstruction. And Happy, he sees, Tony sees the dog tags that Happy is pointing to, and it leads to this soldier, and it leads to Tennessee. And Tony is about to leave for Tennessee when, ding dong!
And he's like, wait, ding dong? I just, like, we should be at high security level. I threatened a terrorist for crying out loud. Why is the doorbell ringing?
And it's Maya. Her name is Maya Hansen. And just as they're about to have a conversation, there's a missile.
No. While she's trying to talk to him, he's like, oh yeah, everything's fine. And then you see Pepper just drop the suitcases down to the main floor, and then Pepper and Tony are fighting. And then Maya goes, hey guys, is that supposed to be happening? And then that's when they notice that the missiles are coming.
And what's really interesting is that the first thing Tony does is actually to put the Iron Man suit, the new one, on Pepper, and Pepper helps get Maya out. Now, this is a very interesting hint of what we see in Endgame. It's Pepper as Rescue, but right now it's just Pepper as the Iron Maiden. Woman. I made a medieval joke. Don't send the Inquisition.
You'll never know when they're coming.
True, no one ever expects the Inquisition. Anyway.
Not just any Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition.
So she saves Tony from falling debris. She gets Maya out. Poor dummy is destroyed.
The bunny.
Alas, poor dummy. We do him well. Not bunny. Dummy.
Oh, the dummy.
Alas, poor dummy. We knew it well. So Tony almost drowns because he falls into the water and everything, but he survives. Jarvis saves Tony and they fly away. But they land somewhere cold and the suit wasn't properly charged because it really runs on like bad batteries or something. It's probably the same thing that powers stormtrooper weapons. Just kidding. But so Tony lands somewhere and it's snowy and it kind of looks like he's in like Minnesota or something, somewhere where like there's like significant amounts of snow. And so Tony has no choice but to drag the suit.
Well, before that, he asked Jarvis, where is he at? And he goes, Tennessee, sir. I create a flight plan, remember? And he was like, no, we shouldn't be in Tennessee. And then it disengages him out of the suit because he's having like a malfunction.
Battery problems.
Yeah, and then Jarvis shuts down and Tony's like, no, don't leave me, which then leads him to dragging the carcass of the Iron Man suit.
Right, so he drags the carcass, he steals a poncho from a wooden Indian, and he calls Pepper using a payphone. Yes, children, apparently payphones still exist in Tennessee, or they did when this movie came out in, like, what, 2013?
There are actually still payphones around, but they're very few.
Anyway,
don't forget to use 1-800-COLLECT. Dating myself there.
He leaves Pepper a message that she like reads, listens when she like puts the Iron helmet back on or something. So the suit is dead and Tony, he tells Pepper that he can't come home until he gets the Mandarin. So he breaks into someone's garage and meets Harley Keener in Tennessee. The kid knows about PTSD. He's not very good about acknowledging the triggers of Tony's PTSD, but he's a kid. The fact that he knows about PTSD in the first place is actually very impressive. So he has a potato gun, and Tony's like, oh, well, it's just a rudimentary design, blah, 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 and like Harley demonstrates how accurate he is. Okay.
So, but you're all out of ammo now.
Potato gun. Stark approved. So he learned about this. So he learned about this soldier who like in town, who like in the town exploded or had a bomb and he like detonated himself. And as Tony looks at the like the outlines of the shadows of the individuals that died, the shadow of the soldier himself is gone. And Tony realizes that he didn't have a bomb. He was the bomb. Spontaneous human combustion. So he asks Harley if there is someone in town who still knows him. He goes, well, his mom is at this bar. And so he goes to the bar and she has like a file, and Tony talks to the soldier's mom and he says, well, I don't think your son killed himself. But just when they're about to get to like the nitty gritty of like
the conversation,
right, some lady shows up from Homeland Security.
Which, and, by the way, this woman Tony bumped into on the way into the bar.
Yep. And like, if like I caught her not being Homeland Security in a hot second. Like, come on. Maya and Pepper are like driving somewhere and they're like bonding, and she tells him about working with Killian. AIM, and it's a think tank, and blah 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 blah, and how she needs Tony's help for something.
And she says that she believes that Killian is working with the Mandarin.
Yeah.
I almost said Mandalorian for a second there.
So Tony gets like arrested by this fake Homeland Security agents, and the sheriff of the town is competent. Thank you, competent sheriff. He's like, I'm gonna need to see a warrant. I need a badge. Like, let's do this, sweetheart. And she like melts his face. So Tony gets away, but he there's like interesting scene, like fight scene, because Tony can't fight. Like,
he's never been a fighter.
He's never been a fighter. So it's kind of like almost amusing. But what Tony does have is he has his brain. And so that the way he fights is very like, it's ingenious. So like, he sets the kitchen on fire and he's like, oh, okay, good. I have some breathing room. This psycho lady walks right through the fire and just like her face unmelts. And then the bodyguard shows up. And so I think there's ultimately like an explosion, and
yeah, what Tony did was that he took the dog tags and he threw them in the microwave. And and that's what caused the explosion, which took her out. But then the other guy, he actually got the kid.
Yep. So, let's also not forget that the kid gives Tony his sister's Dora the Explorer watch. It's limited.
No, it was Hello Kitty.
No, it was Dora the Explorer. It was
Hello Kitty.
It was Dora the Explorer.
Hello Kitty.
Dora the Explorer.
Hello Kitty.
How is it that we fight about something?
I'm actually going to have to mute my mic so you can't hear me typing.
It's Dora the Explorer. I can send you the picture. I am sending you the picture so you can sit there in your wrongness and enjoy the limited edition Dora the Explorer watch.
All right, I'm pulling up the chat.
I'm doing a happy dance because I'm right. Zoom into it.
That's what I'm doing.
Zoom in, zoom in. I'll wait.
I am zooming into it. Oh, I hate you so much.
I am very rarely wrong.
Shut up, Meg.
I'm fabulous. Anyway, so let's see. Where were we during the Explorer watch? Ah, yes. So Tony has the file. And meanwhile, like, the Stark suit is, like, being charged. And, like, the original plan was, like, to fix it and then go. But there's stuff in this file that he finds that's really important, and so he's planning to go to he just drives away. And him and the kid have like a nice bonding moment, and the kid is like, he tries to guilt trip Tony hardcore. Like, that, it's actually very impressive.
And actually, before that, we kind of skimmed over one thing. Oh, you kind of alluded to it, but like when Tony and Harley go to the site that that like the one soldier blew up at, Harley is like constantly asking about space and the aliens in New York and stuff like that, and he's like he actually provokes Tony into a anxiety attack.
Yes, he does, and he sort of feels bad about it, but not really.
But he got a snowball thrown at him, so that worked.
Yes, he did. So Tony gives the kid some like actually decent advice. And this kind of advice does not translate to Homecoming, I noticed. Like, I don't remember exactly what he says, but it was like words of wisdom and everything, and I'm like, where was this in Homecoming?
Well, I think the character, I think the Tony Stark character from Iron Man 3 to Spider-Man Homecoming had changed so dramatically.
Yeah, I guess.
Because that's keep fair. In mind that between Iron Man 3 and Homecoming,
there's Age of Ultron, there's Civil War.
There's Age of Ultron, Civil War, and I think really those events really changed Tony.
Fine. Anyway, so the president gets a phone call while he's on Air Force One, and the Mandarin has like the CEO of Roxxon, and he basically tells the president that like, if you don't call within the next 30 seconds, I'm going to blow his head off. And so the president calls because his phone number, like they literally mentioned that the phone just happened, the number like was hacked into the president's phone.
And he called.
Yeah. So the president like calls, but he allegedly shoots him anyway. And it's never actually confirmed whether or not like what happened to the CEO of Roxxon, because as we find out later, everything, like, we'll get to that. Remind me to talk about Roxxon.
Hey, don't forget to get your rocks on.
So this is probably the fastest, lamest, and most blatant you miss a Stanley cameo, but eh.
Oh, it was the when Tony got into the TV van, mm-hmm. and they're doing the little pageant or whatever, and Stan's one of the judges. And he's holding up 10.
Speaking of the TV van, he needs an internet connection, and he meets his number one fan, because of course it has to be. And so he hacks into like AIMS, whatever, and he learns of the crazy experiments they did.
Oh, well, that's also because he had to get the password from Rhodey.
This is true.
Which was hilarious because he's holding up a whole bunch of people.
Because the tech in Rhodey's new Iron Patriot suit is like from AIM. So it's, what was it, War Machine 69 and War Machine Rock, so the next.
Yeah, War Machine Rock 69. And, like, the funny thing is that, like, the infidels that, or the terrorists, or whatever Rhodey was doing at that time, whoever he was holding up, they started laughing at him when
they
he gave
terrorists. They were just a family that, unfortunately, didn't...
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was the Cold Trail. That's right. Because they're trying to track the Mandarin. Yeah.
Yeah, so these are, like, fake trails that, like, don't lead anywhere.
Yeah.
But he does find something about like a base in Miami. But anyway, Tony is in so he's in the van and he does research into AIM and he sees the footage and like it's like human experimentation to get people to like regrow limbs, and we see the crazy lady who had like she was missing an arm. And like the arm regrows, but then there's also this like unstable element and they spontaneously combust.
Yeah, depending on the person, because it wasn't every person that had that issue.
Yeah, that was never really explained. Like, why is it certain people explode and not others?
Had to be something in their genetic code.
Anyway, so Maya needs Stark. And Pepper is like the inn. So basically Pepper and Maya are in a hotel room and there's a knock on the door and they're like, oh, they think it's room service, and the door opens and it's actually Aldrich Killian. And apparently him and Maya, like, Maya went to start because she needed his help, and Killian was like, fine, I'm not happy about this, but I get it. And Pepper is the in order to get Tony to do something to help fix the issue. So they take Pepper hostage. Meanwhile, one of those melty people takes Rhodey's suit.
Or at least incapacitate him so she essentially kidnaps Rhodey while he's in the Iron Patriot suit.
Yes, because he's like, you could take the suit off my cold dead hands. And so the kid gives Tony some like advice or an idea. And Tony goes after the Mandarin and he finds him.
Yeah, he pretty much told him it's like, because he was called a mechanic.
So he's like, well, you're an inventor or a mechanic or something.
You're a mechanic. Make something.
So he goes to a hardware store and makes up a bunch of like, it's like, I wish this was like a little bit more like a heist movie because he just like makes gadgets. It was kind of fun. and so Tony goes into this compound and it's like relatively guarded, but it's kind of unclear what it's guarding because the first thing we see is like it's like an opium den. It's like a bunch of like junkies. And we go into the bedroom and there's like these two hot ladies and Tony hides behind like the headboard of the bed and the Mandarin comes in and out of the bathroom.
And he's like he's a completely different person. He's a junkie.
Yeah. And so basically, let's see. Kikis Tony goes after the Mandarin, finds him in a drink, and he's not the... So the Mandarin is not the Mandarin. It is revealed he's actually an actor and a drug addict. And so, like, and I was like, oh, they, like, set you straight and, like, they gave you this gig to get you clean. They're like, no, they gave me drugs. Okay. He's like, oh, it's all an act. It's just showmanship. See this gun? It's not real bullets. It has blinks in it. But so despite this, Tony still gets caught and chained up. And Killian, in a very like classic movie bad guy, tells him his entire plan and then kills Maya.
Well, no, he didn't kill Maya for the sake of killing Maya. The reason he killed Maya was because Maya was going to kill herself. Because she didn't like what Killian was doing. She did not approve of what Killian was doing and was threatening to essentially end herself to essentially take away a key person to help with the project.
And so Killian kills Maya and they get the Tony and they steal Rhodey's suit. And it becomes very obvious what the... So the full plan is never revealed, really. It's like not quite clear. Nothing is ever fully explained. But from what I understood is the vice president is corrupt and has like a disabled daughter. And Killian, like, so there's like some kind of deal between the vice president and Killian that like, you know, he'll cure his daughter and the vice president will probably like become president so that he can like fully fund Killian's project. This is why you never trust the government. And so the president is basically a Trojan horse, or the Iron Patriot is actually the Trojan horse. So Rhodey, the Iron Patriot, like ends up on Air Force One, but Tony and Rhodey realize what's going on. So they make the very big mistake of calling the vice president, like, you know, this is on its way, like, blah, blah, blah. I'm not in the suit. Please alert the Secret Service. And so he hangs up, and in the Secret Service, he's like, yes, of course, I'll do that. He hangs up, and then the Secret Service is like, everything okay, Mr. Vice President? He goes, everything's fine. And so the Iron Patriot boards Air Force One.
And that also leads you to believe that when that phone number that got put into the president's phone... Was done by the Vice President. Because who would have had access to that?
Yep. So I like... Tony sneaking into the compound was actually kind of cool. And I'll talk about this the rest of this when we get to the end. But Stiles's dad from Teen Wolf makes a cameo in this as like an armed forces person, which I thought was kind of funny. So although Tony's suit is not fully charged, because of that remote capability, he uses the suit to actually save some of the passengers on Air Force One, because
13 to be precise.
yes, as because there's because Iron Patriot creates like a giant hole inside the plane.
Actually, no, that was the bodyguard.
Oh, right, that was the actual bodyguard.
Because the Iron Patriot had already flown with the had already left with the president.
Yeah, so Tony says everybody, and Killian meanwhile infuses Pepper with the serum. And she's like, "Is this revenge on Tony?" And then it dawns on her that she's actually a trophy, his victory over Tony Stark. So they realize where Pepper's, they know, they find out where Pepper's being held, or like they home beak into the iron suit or whatever. And Tony calls like all the suits to like come and help him fight. And there's a suit named Igor, and it's kind of cool. And like some of the suits have like different color, and like it would have been cool to like have seen some of the capabilities of those other suits, but we saw them in like a blink and you miss it force. But Jarvis getting to like pilot all of these different suits is such a hint at Age of Ultron. I don't know what is. So let's see.
Well, it's also gonna, it's also, it was a hint to one of Tony's most classic lines in Age of Ultron, which is a suit of armor around the world, which is also repeated in Endgame.
Yes. So let's see. Different bots, the suits are fighting. Rhodey's just like badass. Like he's awesome. It's nice to see him do like action as Rhodey, not as War Machine or as Terrence Howard. Was it Terrence Howard?
Yeah, Terrence Howard was the first one.
So like Don Cheadle really delivers on this role, and it's fun to see Rhodey, like the fact that like Rhodey can shoot, like he has legit army training. He's not just a guy in a uniform or a guy in a suit. He has skills. So let's see. So Tony, let's see. Pepper. I think Rhodey should have been promoted to general at this point. Just saying. But there's a moment where like Killian has Pepper, and then there's a moment where she like falls, and it looks like she dies. And Tony jumping in and out of suits was actually pretty cool. That was actually a very well done fight. Like I was very impressed by that. So Tony uses the suits to blow up Killian, but it doesn't really work. So there's like a scene where they're like on of like the lower ground of the oil tanker, and he like blows up Killian, but that doesn't work. And he's like, "Oh crap, what do I do now?" And then Pepper shows up and like chops his head off.
Yeah.
And Tony's like, "Wow, this is really impressive. You should only wear this from now on," which is like
Kind of a little bit of a sexist thing to say.
it's not so much that it's the fact that she's a woman, it's just the fact that she's his girlfriend and he's attracted to her. So I'm willing to forgive it because he's like, "Oh, yoga pants and a tee and
Tank
like
top.
a bra." Let's see. So Tony uses the suits and then to bl let's see. So he destroys all of the suits and shows that he's choosing Pepper over the suits. And so the next thing is he fixes the narration continues and he says like he fixes Pepper and then he like gives her a neck and then he finally goes under the knife to remove the extra shrapnel and fix the hole in his chest because that's awkward. I don't know how you fix that. Because like the issue I have is not the removal of the shrapnel. Like that's I think that's like that's a surgery that is done quite often on people who are in combat. My issue is the fact that there's like a hole in his chest.
I think there's a well, one, you don't know how deep the hole is.
Iron
Number,
Man 1.
yeah, that's true. But they never played with that after that.
Yes, they did actually, a little bit.
Iron Man 2, they kind of a little bit.
When Tony makes the new element and the new reactor.
Yeah, and he just pops it in. But
But anyway,
like,
so he removes the shrapnel. He gives the sh he put turns the shrapnel into a fancy necklace that he gives to Pepper, and he tosses the react the little arc reactor down the same cliff in Santa Monica. And then we can, so let's see.
And he gets Dummy out of the river or out of the ocean. He gets a bunch of other things and he puts it on a trailer and he, that's kind of the end of the movie.
Yeah, like the music at the end is actually very interesting. And the internal monologue continues. So that's the end of the movie. And it ends on kind of like a hopeful note that like, you know, this is a new beginning, yada, yada, yada. Which kind of makes sense of like where we see him again later at the end of phase two. Finally, we go to the after credit scene where the narration kind of continues for a little bit longer. And so the narration starts and then we go to the scene and it looks like, oh, first reaction is like, oh, Tony's talking to a therapist. That's nice. He's Tony Stark. None of this is a secret.
It's Banner.
It's Banner.
Banner was asleep.
Banner fell asleep after like Switzerland. And he's like, I don't like, I'm not a psychologist. I don't have the, and Tony's like, what? The training, the background. Temperament. So this is the only after credit scene that doesn't really tie into anything other than the Hulk is still a thing. And that there's still science bros. So let's talk about the good and then we'll talk about the bad.
I think starting with the good. And then there's also the thing where at the end of the movie, Harley got all the new toys and he got the Mach 2 or the Mark 2 blueprints for the potato gun.
And then it signed the mechanic.
Yeah. But I think in good was that it was kind of like, in a way, it was Tony taking a look at himself in the mirror type deal. It was like it was a retrospective.
Yeah.
And he was looking at himself as to why he got to that part at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like if you actually look at it, it's like if you start like if you actually put like the that end part at the beginning and then tell it as that story, it builds it as a full story of him reflecting on that, on all the events that led up to that one point. And I think that's good. I also like the fact that it worked with him with the PTSD of the immediate effects of dealing with the events of Avengers.
And I think the beginning of the film, including the opening narration and the opening scene of the suits getting destroyed, and then the Switzerland thing really does a good job of like setting up where we end up and kind of the progression of the film. I think the humor in this movie is actually pretty decent. I like the scene where Tony's like, you know, he's like handcuffed and he's talking to the bat, to these like
the two bad guys.
And they're like, he's like, they're like looking at this door, the Explorer, which he goes like, careful, it's a limited edition.
And then the one stomps on it.
Yeah, and he's like, that was my friend's sister's watch. Like, what is wrong with you? Harley is actually very accurate child character. Like, sometimes sometimes child characters are either too young in the age they're supposed to be or they're a little bit older. Here, Harley was actually very believable in the sense that, like, yeah, this is a kid that's, like, maybe doesn't have the best social skills, who is like, you know, his mom is a single mom, but like he's still a very smart kid. So he was a little too smart for his own good, but not at the sense of making him seem too smart for his own age or maturity wise.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I liked Harley as a character. He was fun.
Yeah. I also like the chemistry between Harley and Tony. I'm blanking on the line that they said to each other all the time. They kind of guilt trip each other.
Mm-hmm. What was it like? It was like a special because we're connected. That's what it was.
I feel we're connected, Sasha. I just want you to know something. This has been so much fun. I feel like we're connected. Just like shut up, Mike.
I have no idea what feeling you're talking about.
I'm just mimicking the film. Just leave me alone, damn it.
Oh, really? If I punch you in the face, it will hurt. And you know how I know that? Because we're connected.
There we go. There's our moment.
You're welcome. So
just results in me getting punched in the face. I don't know how I really feel about that, though.
This movie, I will give it credit that it does kind of feel like it's the end of Tony's journey from the pre-Tony to the pre-like terrorist hostage Tony Stark to this Tony Stark we continue to see through the rest of the MCU.
Yeah, because like when we saw Jensen, in the flashback to Switzerland. Obviously, that was a throwback to Iron Man 1 and how Tony was before he ran into Jensen again in the cave. Yes. And, you know, and how he's, you know, like when it came to the Mandarin and the attack and what happened to Happy and, you know, that being Tony's best friend, you know, and he cares about him, you know, it angered him. And then when he gets poked and prodded, it's like, you know what? Just me and you. Oh,
and in case anybody is shocked by this point, we forgot to mention that Happy's fine. He wakes up and he's like very, it's a very important scene in Downton Abbey and he didn't want to miss it.
But he was okay by looking away and staring at the nurse's boobs.
Anyway, I did not catch that.
Oh, no, you don't. Yeah, go back and watch just that scene again. You'll see it. Because his eyes shift. You just watch his eyes.
So before we get to some of the behind the scenes, let's talk about some of the... So this is like the end of the journey. It's the beginning of like... It's also like the end of a phase of like Iron Man movies that leads to the next phase of Tony's journey that we will see at Age of Ultron that will lead us through the rest of the MCU. So this is like, from this point forward, I think Tony is on the verge of understanding that like he has a responsibility and that like now it's time to give back to the world versus like just letting somebody else run Stark Industries or like no longer making weapons or being Iron Man. And this is the very important thing. This is not an Iron Man movie. This is a Tony Stark movie. Because the first movie is about the origin of Iron Man. The second movie is about the acceptance of Iron Man. And the third movie is about the acceptance of Tony Stark as a new person, aside from Iron Man. And I think that's actually one of the flaws of this movie. And it's not necessarily a bad flaw, but it is a flaw regardless, because there is significant focus on Tony Stark, and the Iron Man aspect is almost thrown to the side.
Well, also keep in mind, because I was just thinking about this, how long did he actually be in a suit? He's not in the suit very long.
The longest time was the flight from Santa Monica to Tennessee that we didn't see.
Yeah, but outside that, like, he was in the suit at home in the beginning, you know, when he first put it on. Then he had the suit on after it came to him in Miami. And then after that, he
kind of jumped between suits.
He jumped between suits, but he was only in those suits for a matter of seconds.
Yep.
So he wasn't really in the Iron Man suit a lot.
Nope. And like, I like the fact that this movie did focus a little bit more on Tony, but I think it did it at the expense of Iron Man. And when people go to see Iron Man, the very significant lack of Iron Man, like, it makes me understand why a lot of people were very disappointed by this movie.
Yeah.
Something else that was done very badly was this twist of the Mandarin that a lot of people really complained about. And apparently, so we know that when Favreau directed the first Iron Man movie, his ultimate goal was to do a trilogy and have the Mandarin be the final bad guy.
Which was alluded to in the first film because of the Ten Rings. Yep.
But the issue is that in Shane Black never intended to use the Mandarin. He did not want to use the Mandarin. And the reason for this is...
So it sounds like Spider-Man 3 with Sam Raimi, where he didn't want Venom. He doesn't like the character Venom, but he was forced to use the character.
Here is the thing, though. I don't know how forced he was, but he never intended for the Mandarin to be the ultimate bad guy because, according to him, in his view, the Mandarin was kind of like a racist portrayal of a character. And on the one hand, he's not wrong. But at the same time, like, this would have been an opportunity to reclaim the character, in my opinion, from those racist roots in order to present a really, really interesting bad guy. Because we didn't really get any truly interesting bad guys in the Iron Man series.
Yeah, but luckily the Mandarin's going to get redeemed with the Shang Li film.
That would be awesome.
They've already said that he's the villain.
Oh, good.
Because it's Shang Li and the Ten Rings or whatever. Mm. So it's like the Ten Rings is obviously Mandarin.
And then I think there's like a weird like short, because Marvel used to do shorts that like has Ben Kingsley, and it's revealed that he like that there is a real Mandarin. But Ben Kingsley was funny in this, and I will admit I sort of saw the twist coming, and I don't know whether or not this was intentional, because the first time I watched it, I remember that I thought the accent was really funny. Like, it wasn't an accent you could pin down. It almost felt like it was someone speaking lines in a way that they were told to speak those lines. And from a character perspective, not necessarily an actor's choice. And so one of the things that this movie doesn't explain and is the whole thing with the guy from Roxxon. Did he actually like get taken in the back and shot in the face afterwards? Or like, did they let him go? Like, we never hear or see that guy again, but we know that the fake Mandarin didn't kill him because he said they never gave him a real gun. They just gave him like blank ones with blanks. So what happened to the CEO of Roxxon?
Maybe he was in on it.
Could be. Although the terror on his face did seem very real for someone who was supposed to be faking it. I can't imagine oil tycoons are good actors.
No, but one thing I will say, because we're talking about Ben Kingsley, is like Ben Kingsley is a great actor. And the fact that he can go from playing that sociopath Mandarin character to the drug addict Trevor, and like he's being interrogated by Tony and he falls asleep.
Yep.
Or he goes right into the soccer game that's playing behind him. And then, like, now he's being interrogated by Rhodey and Tony, and he falls asleep again in the middle of the interrogation. It's like, it shows the range of Kingsley as an actor.
And it also really shows that, like, he didn't really much care. He was just like, oh, this is a chill little role. I'm going to have fun with it. And actually, I made a correction. I kept saying Santa Monica. I think Tony's actually in Malibu. So the purpose of this movie, in terms of the greater MCU setup, is to get Tony out of Malibu or Santa Monica or wherever it is.
Out of California, essentially.
Out of California. And ultimately, we know that he sets up the compound.
Essentially, it was all a plan to move him to New York.
Yep. So Robert Downey Jr., this is actually very interesting. He actually pushed for Gwyneth Paltrow to have more action scenes, and which like obviously now foreshadowed the appearance of Rescue in Endgame. Let's see. I didn't notice this, but I did remember seeing the tattoo on Aldridge's like chest, and that's actually an Easter egg for Fing Fang Foom, who is this like giant dragon with underwear that like is an Iron Man villain. Like, I don't think he's actually appeared as like a serious villain in comics in a while. He's just like a dorky dragon that everybody makes fun of because he wears purple underpants.
Hey man, don't you dare disrespect that purple dragon with underpants or Pan dragon with purple Bill underpants.
Did fight me. Also something that is strange and kind of makes sense because of where Tony is mentally, there's a significant lack of AC/DC songs in this movie.
I think that's a Shane Black thing.
Does he have something against AC/DC?
I don't know, but like when Jon Favreau directed those two, and even with Joss Whedon with Avengers, you got AC/DC with Iron Man's appearance, whereas with Shane Black, you can kind of feel that Shane Black went a completely different direction.
Yeah.
With a lot of things.
Yeah, that's accurate. And like, the only thing is that, like, honestly, I felt like Aldridge being the ultimate bad guy was, first of all, super obvious, considering Tony left him on a roof for like 20 minutes and like never intended to actually go to the roof to meet with Aldridge, but it kind of felt like a rehash of Iron Man 2 almost, in the sense that the bad guy is another rival organization that needs Tony, or like does something similar to what Tony does, or in this case needs Tony. Because like in the first Iron Man, the bad guy was his father's friend. Right, Obadiah Stane, who wanted to take the company and to make weapons and get rid of Tony. In the second one, our bad guy is Hammer, is Justin Hammer, who's like useless. And like ultimately, he doesn't fight with him, he fights with Vanko. So maybe in a way, it's like a bad guy progression zone where like, here you fight the bad guy, here you fight the bad guy's proxy, and here you fight another bad guy who's like also a weapons and or tech guy.
Yeah, and not only that, but like, and I know I'm jumping far ahead to Far From Home, but you kind of like the whole premise of Far From Home with the villain is that a lot of them are people who were scorned by Stark in some form or manner.
Like, it would have been fun to have a villain who just like didn't like decide to become a supervillain because Tony Stark was mean to him.
Well, it's funny because somebody actually created a list of every, for the MCU, every enemy Tony Stark had. Oh. Or somebody who became a villain because of Tony Stark. And it's like Obadiah Stane, Justin Hammer.
Obadiah Stane was a bad guy like from the beginning, and that was...
But still, Tony was there. It was still somebody part of Tony's life.
Okay, fine.
And then you had Justin Hammer, Vanko, you had Aldrich Killian, then you had Jake Gyllenhaal's character, you had, you know...
From Iron Man 1.
Yeah, the dude from Iron Man 1. Like, you had all these characters that from Far From Home that were somehow scorned because of Tony... that became part of this thing against Tony. And then, like, I think there are even other people, like Ultron was on the list.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I think that somebody jokingly
put... Ultron wanted.
Yeah, but then the funny thing is I think somebody jokingly put Captain America on the list.
I mean, honestly, like... So yeah, like, Tony Stark has pissed off a lot of people, but, like, still, it would have been nice to have an Iron Man bad guy who wasn't like directly affected by Tony, which is why I think what a lot of people wanted and why like the Mandarin would have been a cool villain. But we will see him, the real Mandarin. I can't wait to see who they cast as the real Mandarin.
I think they already did.
Did they? Okay.
We'll look it up afterwards, because every time I have to type on here, you can hear me typing excessively because I'm on a dinner tray. But yeah, I we'll look it up afterwards, because I'm pretty sure that...
I'm looking it up now.
Yeah. Because it's quieter for you to type compared to my loud typing. It's either that or they have somebody rumored that they really like, that they want for the role.
Let's see if there's an IMDb page. Yep. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And I love the fact that as soon as you open the IMDb page, the first thing you see is the Shang-Chi poster. Then you see that stupid spaceship clip of them flying from Dark Phoenix. And then to the right, you see Adam Driver's, like a clip or something. It says Adam Driver is best known, but it's the scene from, like, as Kylo Ren. So Tony Chu Wei Lung has been cast as the Mandarin. He is an actor that I do not believe I have seen in anything before.
Well, that's the interesting about Marvel. They'll take unknowns.
Yeah. It looks like most of his movie credits are, I believe, Chinese.
Is Donnie Yen on the list? Because I remember reading a rumor that Donnie Yen was being rumored for the movie.
So the only casting that is confirmed in IMDb is Awkwafina is in it, and that Simu Liu is playing Shang-Chi. That's it.
Okay, because I remember reading a rumor that Donnie Yen was rumored to possibly play a role like as a mentor or something in the film, which I would be perfectly okay with because I'm a massive Donnie Yen fan.
Anything is possible. This movie does not come out until summer of 2021, so
yep.
You never know.
We'll find out more.
So the funny thing is, President Ellis is actually was inspired by William Ellis, who, or excuse me, Warren Ellis, who was the writer for the comic book that like loosely inspired this adaptation. Jude Law was apparently cast, was considered for the part of Killian, and I don't think he could have done it the way Guy Pearce did it. And I think Guy Pearce was perfect for this role. Almost makes me wish they hadn't killed him. Almost.
Well, is he really dead?
Yes. He literally got his head chopped off. Come on.
That extremist thing could be interesting, especially for him, because he was at such a higher level than everyone else. I mean, the guy was breathing fire, for Christ's sake.
And the other thing that I noted was that apparently when this movie was being filmed, and weirdly enough, the scenes in Tennessee were actually filmed in North Carolina. Because apparently North Carolina offered Marvel like $20 million in tax breaks or tax credits or whatever, and the code name for this movie was actually Caged Heat.
How adorable.
Which, like, the caged part kind of makes sense because Tony's like caging himself and he's dealing with like the PTSD and everything. And I actually like the fact that we looked at the ramifications of a person that was involved in New York. So Tony is the only character aside from Banner out of that group that had never fought in an actual war or had been a warrior. You know, Thor's fought many a vict had many a victories as an Asgardian. Cap was a World War II veteran. You know, Rhodey was for some reason not in this movie. Black Widow and Hawkeye are spies and like have training and all of that. So, and you know, Banner's used to fights and giant explosions, or the Hulk is anyway. So Tony's the only character who, with the possibility of having like, and not to say that all of these characters still can't have traumatic experiences from this event, but because Tony's the only one that like almost literally died in space all alone. That's really scary. So overall, this movie's definitely lackluster, and I think it definitely suffers from the lack of Iron Man in the movie. Because we love Tony Stark. Tony Stark is, you know, in a lot of ways the father of the MCU, but it's not just about Tony. It's about Iron Man. And I think that the strength of this movie could have been with the fact that he had to learn to accept the concept of Iron Man and accept, which like he kind of does, but we don't really see it, accept the idea of himself as a hero in the Iron Man suit. And he's not just a jerk who's dying. He's not just someone who was kidnapped by terrorists. Like there needed to be just a teensy weensy bit more balance in this movie.
Yeah. Not the start for phase two that you're hoping.
No, and I think that was the issue a lot of people had, that like it didn't really start. I think, you know, you need a strong opener and a strong ending. And unfortunately, out of this phase, there's only two movies that are actually genuinely strong. One ties into everything within the Age of Ultron, and then the other one is Guardians of the Galaxy, which doesn't do, I don't think it really did anything to set up.
Yeah, let's see here. So you have Thor Dark World, which we're doing next, and that was the hardest dud. However, it did get redeemed a little bit with Endgame. Then you got Civil War, or not Civil War,
Civil War is
Winter,
pretty great.
Winter Soldier.
Then
Then
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Then you have Age of Ultron.
Oh, Ant-Man is part of this
And then
big.
you have, and then Ant-Man ends it because the way they like doing it is because a lot of people ask, oh, well, you ended phase one with Avengers. Why didn't you end phase two with Avengers Age of Ultron? And the reason for it was, is that, well, you still, with Avengers, you still had some fun with it. It wasn't all dark and gloomy. Whereas we wanted to end it with Ant-Man because the very next movie to start phase three was Civil War.
Okay, so then phase two is the most divisive phase because
Yeah.
you have three really good movies and three movies.
Yeah, so
So in terms of Iron Man's success, let's see if there's anybody else worth mentioning here. Iron Man 3.
Not really. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we liked how it addressed certain things, like PTSD, Tony's being able to reflect on himself and stuff like that. I mean, but it lacked more than it helped.
Yet, despite all of that, it made a crap ton of money.
Well, of course.
So just to give you guys an idea, so their budget was 200 million. And this movie's box office was $1.2 billion. So not only did they make money off this movie, they made bank over and over again. But despite some of the criticism, it has a 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. Although I wonder what is the lowest rated MCU movie?
It's got to be Dark World.
Let's see. Now we're thinking ahead. Thor Dark World only has 66%.
So that is, and I think that's the lowest rated one. The only other one that I can think would be rated low would be Ultron.
Ultron is ranked higher.
Yeah, so it probably was Dark World, Ultron, Iron Man 3 in that order for the lowest.
Although, funny enough, Iron Man 3 actually has a higher rating than Iron Man 2.
Huh.
Iron Man 2 is at 73, Iron Man 3 is at 79.
Which is interesting because Iron Man 2 is better than Iron Man 3.
Yep. Oh, good. You can actually look up the entire like roster of MCU movies. Oh, I was like, wait, can you just list them? That's all the upcoming ones. 88, 85. Technically, the lowest ranked Marvel entity is Marvel's Inhumans, but it's at 11%.
Isn't that a show?
Yeah, well, we're not gonna go through the shows, but
But anyway, Sasha, I think it's wrap-up time.
Yep. Also,
So
Thor Dark World and the Incredible Hulk are only 1% away from each other, 66 and 67. So at least the Hulk movie can say it's better than Thor Dark World. But unfortunately, that is where the next bit of our journey will take us.
yep. And so with that, Sasha, where can the people find you on the social medias?
If you have not yet, please follow my butt on social media, not my literal butt. That would be bad. But my dorky nerdinessness on Tumblr, that's geekgirl101.tumblr.com, or see my very weird pictures on Instagram, at geekycaptain.
Alrighty, and as always, you can follow me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. Everything for the show and everything else that I do is at txhdhockey.com and then /nerdy-notions for this show specifically. And buy my stuff on eBay, please.
Someone has
Just
to.
search extremist75 under users or sellers, no E at the beginning, and just buy my Power Rangers stuff.
With that in mind, please pray for us as we attempt to get through Thor Dark World.
I'll be able to get through it fine. I just put it on in the background. I'll just work on the website.
Good for you. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.